geluba naqdoog liyo lugal wa ku darara melay nabadi joogta.
Welcome to Isirka, a digital journey of self-discovery. My name is Amina Isir, and thank you so much for joining me on my journey. Isir means roots in Somali, and it was a name that my grandma gave me when I first met her in Hargeisa. And this project is a way of me discovering and publicly making sense of my Somali roots. You all have been saved from years of private conversations, but I still want this to kind of function as a continuous dialogue, just more of a public dialogue, and really just, you know, have conversations around people's histories, their lived experiences, and really kind of just push back against this culture of silence that seeks to delegitimize our lived experiences. My dad's favorite pastime is talking and learning more about people's lives and lineage. Many times he's met a random person, a random Somali person on the street. They get to talking, and within 5 minutes, my dad is telling this man or woman about their entire family history and the times he somehow both met their uncle, auntie, and grandmother. And, you know, I grew up my whole life watching this, and now I realize it probably was not the norm, but watching this play out time and time again gave me a strong appreciation for identity, history, and connection, which then in turn informed how I understood myself and my background. So to tell you all a little bit about me, I was born in America, July 1990, and I was the first child of my family born in America, outside of the continent, and born, period. a lot of firsts that I didn't necessarily want to take on, but, you know, you have no choice other than to rep who you are. Yeah, I'm first-generation American, and despite current events, I will represent Team Somali America. And when I tell people that I was born in the States, they're usually surprised. But one man surprised me when he told me that he was on the last flight out of Mogadishu, July 1990. And normally, I don't even really check to tell people like when I was born, but that like really shifted something in my head. I had been living as long as he'd been forced in exile. And it was a very unlikely meeting, but that has like still stuck in my head years later. So, and that also kind of helped me understand the fact that I was growing up watching Somalis as they were dealing with the effects of settling into the diaspora. It wasn't necessarily a temporary thing. It was like permanently settling in the diaspora with no access to the country. And for me and my generation, this inaccessibility to the homeland really shaped who we were and what we knew about the country. We only were able to kind of put tidbits together based on what our parents told us, what mainstream media told us, and whatever nostalgic pages came on the internet once the internet became big. And so my father, the extreme extrovert that he is, really tried to drive home a sense of being Somali by making sure that we had a strong foundation. And we didn't live in Minnesota, but I really grew up with a strong Somali community, a very tight-knit small Somali community. Somali cultural identity was celebrated throughout my childhood. We would go to Ruwais. I remember seeing Khadra Dahir Ege as a kid. Hiba Noura all came to New England in the 90s. We had community newspapers specifically for the Somalis that lived in my state. And it's so cool seeing that now. It had updates of really any kind of political happenings like in the States and happening to Somalis across the diaspora and to Somalis back home. So although it was really focused on establishing a Somali nucleus here in the state, a lot of the work that was happening at that time, especially in the early 90s, was really kind of advocating for the situation back in Somalia and the political and humanitarian crisis that was taking place. And so we always went to all these different Somali meetings. It was like so obligatory. We had to go to Sunday school and we had to go to all these Somali like cultural events. But he also had us travel across the world, really to understand our culture and our people. And as a kid, I really hated this. Like, he would always tell us that I am taking you places to see people, not for places or things. And now that I'm an adult, I really travel in the same way. But as a kid, we would spend a lot of our summer vacations in a family's house, just sitting, staring at other kids. Maybe we spoke the same language many times. When it comes to my family, we didn't. But we found ways to make do. And I thought it was really annoying that he would spend all of our summer vacations just sitting and talking to old people. Like, my dad would, like, always chill with his dad and his dad's peers. And I didn't realize what he was doing at the time. But now, I could go anywhere and people will ask me, oh, who are you, you know, like, ya tahai, ya kudalai. And between my grandpa and my dad, they'll know one of them. Like, Allah, and then tell me some story about my dad. So it's also, for me, it's become a way to learn more about them through other people in the same way that my dad was doing to strangers that he's met, right? So now, I have to say that my dad gained so much wisdom and understanding of what came before him by having those experiences and having dialogue with the elder generation when he really could have gone about his life. And now I've really appreciated that as well and understand, like, the best way to honor one's existence is to really kind of let them tell their story and express themselves in a way that they feel comfortable with. And as kids, we would really go anywhere. We weren't too good for anything. We would go to the projects, we'd go to small European towns or foreign dignitaries' houses, all in the name of enjoying Somali hospitality. And at the time, he used to really enjoy the fact that we could really go anywhere and get on. And I used to think that that was bizarre. But now as an adult, adaptability is a strong skill set to have. So generally appreciative for that. And while I couldn't stand the rules that came with being a Somali girl child, being told, skafarisa, amos, asastur, hishad, blah, was a pain in the ass. I understood from a young age that being a Somali afforded me the opportunity to go anywhere in the world and be taken care of. And because we went to so many different types of Somalis or Somali people, I was able to understand that, you know, not everyone really played by the same rules. So that also allowed me some freedoms to kind of navigate through this gendered experience. But we never went to Waitangi. And my dad always told us that if the Somali state didn't collapse, we would have had Somali passports as well. And I always wondered if that would legitimize my relationship to this arbitrary country. You know, being raised in the States, it was, where are you from? And I would say my state. Or say, yeah, I'm American. As a kid, the focus was on assimilating to the States and succeeding here. And you really couldn't afford to be different. So Somalia wasn't on our minds at all. But in the house, my mom made sure that we spoke Somali. She would not respond to us if we spoke to her in English. She would wait until we fixed our sentence and asked her or said what we wanted to in Somali. She would always tell us that we needed to learn Somali because not only is it our mother language, but when we went back to the country, she wanted us to be able to understand what people were saying to us and be able to communicate back so we wouldn't be lost. I suppose that always put it in our minds that return was an option. You know, even on, like, on a practical level, her mom was there, her siblings are there, her whole family was still back home. So it made sense that we would eventually go back, but it was so far from our minds and realities. Until I went to college. And where I thought I'd have a fun college experience, I spent years self-analyzing. I studied sociology and international studies, and my entire experience was strongly rooted and shaped by being of the diaspora. I had an opportunity to go to London and study in London. I also went to Belize, and I carried out research on an Afro-Caribbean population. And those experiences, more than anything, made me realize and, like, have a chance to see the importance of holding on to your culture and traditions despite the location, how much time has passed, and made me realize I should focus more on my ethnic background, at least give it a fair chance to explore it for myself. So I went on to graduate school with the intent to go to the motherland. And my whole educational experience or pursuits were really shaped by the idea of Sankofa. And Sankofa is this African ideology that you need to look back. You need to go back to your history, study your roots, understand them to see where you are going. I knew as a child, everyone always told me, don't forget you're Somali, don't forget you're Somali. But nobody ever told me what that meant outside of don't forget and it's Hishad's Astur, you know? And I think now, a lot of times when people kept telling me don't forget, I think it was a way that they were telling themselves not to forget. I watched my family come to North America in waves, and as each new person came, then the people that were there years before were kind of settled. And so they didn't even understand each other anymore, because the person that was here for a couple years kind of got used to the American mannerisms and way of life. And so the things that shocked them when they first arrived didn't shock them as much. So while they had their notions of a Somali identity, I went to seek out what mine could look like. And Isidka came out of that experience. I went to Hargeisa for the first time, 2015, the first time I stepped foot on Somali soil, African soil. I made sure that when I went to an African country, the first place that I got to go on the continent was Wotankega. So it was this big homecoming journey for me. I thought it was gonna be something great and exuberant. You know, I had all these romanticized ideals of what that was supposed to be. The reality was a bit different. While that happened years ago, I'm still having conversations now and processing it in a different way than I did in 2016 when I went back, or 2017 when I went back. I decided now to create Isidka, to create an online platform or a space for me to kind of at least capture some of the nuances of those conversations and those processing sessions. The one thing that really stuck out to me is whenever I talk to people and I ask them about the experience, or kind of ask them like, why is this? What is this? Then they'd be like, then we would kind of like connect and process together, right? But unless you go through the experience where you talk about to somebody else, you don't know if it's you're the one who's crazy, or if it's, you know, like, or if everyone else is just, you don't, you can't really kind of make sense of it if you're just kind of experiencing it, processing it. I don't know. I just like processing things honestly with other people and talking to other people, and that's how I build and connect and process. So this audio journey is a way for me to do that. I really like the name Isidka, because Isidka means from the roots or your origin. So focusing on your roots or your origins gives you a good starting place. It doesn't limit you, but it just kind of gives you a good baseline to then grow from. And that's really what I'm kind of using all of this experience for, as a way to unlearn all the things that we've taught. It means to be Somali. It means to be a Somali woman. And once you have a strong sense of your roots, you can bloom into something beautiful. This first season is entitled How Far Would You Travel for Love? And is a play on the idea that Somalis are nomads, that we are always traveling in search of a better life or a better future. But what is better than love? And how does travel or moving look like when it's not only for survival? This season will focus on those who are returning back to the country. And I really wanted this first season to be about return to the country, because it's a narrative that isn't really spoken about too much. So with that, I'll include parts of my own story. I'll include stories of people I've met along my journey, and hopefully you, if you're interested in sharing your own story. And so this first season, How Far Would You Travel for Love, will include stories that center identity, love, and belonging, all innate human qualities that make us better people. So thank you so much for joining me, and look out for episode 2 coming soon. Kukala nakrono, melwana.